It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I have always had a wandering mind, and just a few days ago, my mind wandered from movies to the past, to the future of our country, a very grave future unless we do something about it quickly, unless we take a stand. But how did my mind arrive in such a serious place? You'd be surprised how easily it can happen with me. It started out on a leisure afternoon. I was watching one of my favorite science fiction movies, a DVD that's part of my collection, The Day the Earth Stood Still. Not that stupid remake, a movie I've loved since I was a little kid, the original classic 1950s version, one of the first science fiction films to not be called a B movie. It was an A movie, A plus, if you ask me. We're used to more adult science fiction these days. Believe me, they were not used to that in the 50s. I still haven't seen the remake. But interestingly enough, I did write a review for the remake. Yes, it's true. Way back in the year 2008, I wrote a review for a film before it hit the theaters. Does that sound strange? Writing a review for a movie I hadn't seen? Does that sound fair? Writing a review for a movie I hadn't seen? Well, here's the thing. I didn't need to see the movie. It was a remake. That alone spoke volumes. I knew they were going to change the story, and I knew exactly what they were going to change in the story. Now, mind you, I had no advance information, no inside connections. I also avoided all pre-internet chatter, but I knew, as sure as there's a nose on my face, I knew. I am reading for you now my review written for my town hall blog. It was a daily blog, July 30th, 2008. I've gotten pretty good at predicting movies. That is, I've gotten pretty good at predicting movies that come out of Hollywood. When it's an independent film, they revert back to that old tradition called a story. Maybe you've heard of it. When a movie has an actual story, it is far more difficult to predict. My greatest hatred is remakes of classic movies and remakes of classic TV shows. I grew up as a little kid on Leave It to Beaver, so when the movie version came out, I refused to even see it. I did predict that the kids would not sound like real kids, would not sound like the Cleaver kids, talking sassy ways to their parents. One day, a few years later, when the movie was now on television, I was flipping the channels around with my remote control, and for about 2 minutes, I did indeed catch a scene from the new Leave It to Beaver movie. Ward and June Cleaver were making out on the couch. Wally walked in and shouted, "Hey, you two, get a room!" Yep, quite a tribute to the innocent days of the 1950s. And then, more recently, we had Steven Spielberg's remake of War of the Worlds. Now, I loved the original movie based on the original H.G. Wells classic. This time, I predicted that instead of a scientist and his girlfriend fleeing the alien beings, we would see a father with his troubled teen. You know, the divorced dad who never paid his kid any attention, never went to his basketball game, stuff like that. Spielberg is a brilliant director, to be sure, but I knew even he would be unable to avoid this tired plot device that serves as an automatic ingredient for all of these disaster movies. A parent and their neglected kid are thrown together, or a man with his divorced wife is thrown together. It could be one or the other. After all, Hollywood does have some variety. I must admit, I was wrong about one thing. Since the original War of the Worlds ended with God saving the day, I figured that today's anti-Christian filmmakers would either take God out of the ending completely or use the title Allah in place of God. That did not happen. So War of the Worlds did provide one pleasant surprise, but my other prediction was right on the money. Divorced Tom Cruise and his soured teen son fleeing the Jolly Green Giants from Mars. Recently, I was exposed to some dreadful news. Now they are remaking The Day the Earth Stood Still. This was my favorite, arguably one of the best science fiction films ever made, if not the best. It was well written, well acted, and it had a good message ahead of its time. The special effects were not bad either for the 1950s, and they still hold up. The ahead of its time message was that the aliens were not evil devouring monsters, but rather peaceful aliens who came to warn the Earth that she must give up her tendencies toward war. If not, Earth will not be permitted to live should she venture into outer space. Okay, here's my prediction. Incidentally, I'm not bragging with these predictions. You are probably guessing the same thing right now. Anyone would. This time, the warning will not be about war. It will be about global warming, right? I mean, this is Hollywood. What else could they possibly do? The aliens will warn us about the dangers of global warming. The movie does not come out until December. That's why I wanted to put forth my prediction long before the story could leak out over the internet or from some review. Here's my review ahead of time. It stinks. Okay, that was my blog for Town Hall in July of 2008. And that was my prediction. Anyway, after finishing the strange predictive movie review, I added a note to my readers telling them I had no plans to see the film, but they were free to simply write in the comment section whether or not my prediction was accurate. The first comment posted said I was dead on accurate. After that, knowing my prediction was on record, I felt free to read some reviews. I looked around on the internet to read some customer comments. The first one I saw said it was like watching Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth. And so that's our trip down memory lane for 2008. Much has happened since then in some ways. In other ways, nothing is new under the sun, whatever you might think the sun is doing to our polar ice caps. Look, I understand that whether or not the world is warming in any kind of serious way is a fair question. I am not against such discussions when they're honestly conducted in the realm of real science, not by people benefiting from a certain view of the science. I did an entire radio show on the subject interviewing physicist Chris Severino. You can still listen to that podcast. It's called Global Warming: How Science Often Gets Reinterpreted. It's episode 88. But the sadness and irony of being able to predict what Hollywood is going to do is a separate discussion. The Chicken Little sky is falling alarm cries of politicians who don't really know or care if the globe is warming should also be of concern. Now then, listen to me carefully. You are entitled to whatever scientific opinion you want, whatever scientific conclusion you want, but politically, I am going to tell you right now just exactly what is going on. Nothing profound, nothing complicated, something very simple, but you can take it to the bank. The convenience of global warming for politicians is that it instills fear. That's it. That's all. They love instilling fear. They profit from instilling fear. Once the government has scared the population to death, they can make citizens do anything. They can control our lives. Now, with global warming, they were only achieving a modicum of success. When COVID-19 came along, the fear and paranoia was much easier to spread. Some of that makes sense. After all, COVID was happening in the present, not some apocalyptic future such as the climate change scenarios. A lot of people were dying from this virus, but a lot of people were not dying from this virus. The virus had a 99% recovery rate, and it still does. And yet, because they installed instilled fear. Look how many of our freedoms Americans just voluntarily set aside. Every aspect of life closed down. Schools, restaurants, stores, movie theaters, churches, parks, beaches, in some places even the freedom to take a walk in your own neighborhood or a drive along the coast. COVID itself, while dangerous, was never the nightmare. The government was the nightmare from the beginning. These are the facts, people. The plain facts. You want me to back them up? I already have. Many, many times. I have done program after program where I've shared quotes from politicians shamelessly admitting, publicly admitting, that they were going to take advantage of the COVID-19 virus to enact their agenda, and their agenda, socialism, has been crystal clear. But honestly, people, we don't even have to go there. You don't even need to listen to the politicians to know ahead of time what they plan to do. We actually know all of this as easily as I knew ahead of time the big twist for the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still. You see, anyone can predict the future. All you have to do is study history, which always repeats itself, and study human nature, which always repeats itself. Human nature, when it gains power, acts a certain way. Human nature, when made to feel fearful, acts a certain way. Now, if only they were to make a film called The Day Al Gore Stopped Flying Around on His Fossil Fuel-Powered Private Jet to Give Lectures on Global Warming, then we might have a movie worth seeing. Or how about The Day Joe Biden's Mouth Stood Still? The energy from his mouth alone could power the entire city of Scranton. Did you know Joe comes from Scranton? He does. Did you know this is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious? It is.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Hey, story time with your old pal Bob. A true story, a story about stories, a story taken from my own life. It was that happy, bouncy time of the year once again when our church had its annual Christmas party. A progressive dinner followed by an all too familiar gift exchange, commonly known as white elephant gift. An inexpensive present with a $15 cap that everybody's supposed to bring to the party. Such offerings would be open, stolen, traded, and bartered over until late in the evening when half the people went home content and the other half, hopefully, accepted their consolation prize gag gifts as a reminder that the fun part of Christmas is being with your friends, even if these so-called friends just sold you down the river. This time, I decided to toy with an idea that had been in gestation for years, and frankly, it was going to come together for far less than the maximum $15 figure. I went to the used bookstore, purchased an old paperback copy of Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days, tore the book in half, and crossed out one word of the title on the cover with a magic marker, changing it to Around the World in 40 Days. Needless to say, I was insufferably pleased with myself all evening. In fact, it's safe to say that when some poor sucker finally removed the festive wrapping job and set his eyes on the wonder beneath, I laughed louder and harder than anyone else in the room. Come to think of it, I may have been the only one laughing. I don't remember for sure. I do know that the gift recipient didn't even seem to have so much as a smile on his face. I suppose I haven't grown up too much. Even now, looking back, I still think the stunt was hilarious, even though it is becoming painfully apparent that I will probably go to my grave being the only man on earth who felt that way about it. One thing I will confess, it seemed strange and uncomfortable to tear apart a book, even one that I purchased myself for only a couple of bucks. It was my own property, and I meant no harm or disrespect to the bound pages of fiction. I was only having some fun. Still, the story is a classic, written by a brilliant author, and I get a troubling emotion when I think about ripping it open, even though given a similar situation, I know I would probably pull the stunt again. Maybe my disturbing feeling flows from the awareness that many others destroy books for far more serious reasons, sinister reasons, sometimes by tearing them, sometimes by burning them, and mostly by editing, censoring, or simply choosing not to listen when listening is desperately needed. But books and their new nieces and nephews called Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are made up of words. The importance of a word is almost beyond description. With merely one sentence, words can whisk us off to an imaginary land that feels more tangible than the real world. They serve as a window to the soul, good souls as well as bad. Words can challenge our thinking or confirm our biases. They can encourage our day like a spiritual hug or shatter our self-esteem faster than a jagged stone shatters flesh. The written word and the spoken word, two formidable partners. As human beings, we are responsible to God for the words we use. On Judgment Day, our own words will condemn many of our personal deeds. The God who sculpted you did so by speaking, and the second person of his Trinity was called God the Word before he became God the Son. There are few things in life more sacred than the individual responsibility to use words in such a way that they challenge and build up those around us, continuing the creative process begun by God, who makes us in his own image and wants us to participate in the ongoing, never-ending creative process by partnering with him and nourishing our brothers and sisters, his sons and daughters. Sometimes we must tear down before we can build up, not through weapons of sword and bullet, but with shields of truth rising out of the shadows of confusion like a clear, piercing mirror. God's justice and mercy are carried on the eagle wings of words. So must the justice and mercy of his children. Speaking of justice, there is also the justice of words protecting words. We must speak out against the virtual book burners. Today they are called fact checkers. Yesterday, they were called Nazis. Today, they will call you a Nazi if they don't like your facts, and it's usually more a matter of liking or disliking your facts than seeing if the facts really are factual. Today, they will remove your post from social media. They will do this smugly, telling themselves that they stopped a fascist, failing to grasp the irony that when fascists take over countries, book burnings are the first things that happen. And now that I provided a more contemplative reflection, I still cannot escape my satisfaction for bringing an unforgettable white elephant gift that year. I doubt that anyone at the party that year remembers who went home with the nice coffee mugs or box of See's candy or red candlesticks, but I guarantee somebody remembers opening Around the World in 40 Days unless, and this is entirely possible, unless he learned to successfully block the experience out of his mind in order to better cope with life. In that case, somebody still remembers me and somebody else. God, we're cool, God, aren't we?
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Check out these terrific customer reviews for Bob Siegel's science fiction novel, Push the Winds Around. Another winner from Mr. Siegel. I've always loved the time travel stories, and this one takes a creative approach. Like H.G. Wells' classic, it delves into morals and metaphysics. And as any good time travel mystery, it leaves you satisfied while raising questions at the same time. Here's another review. Quick, thought-provoking, enjoyable read. And just one more. My kind of book. Adventure, fun, excitement, suspense, time travel, love, and a day at the beach. What's not to like? A great book to lose yourself in. Happy reading. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you doing today?
Doing okay, and yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. I hope we had a good 4th of July.
We had a very pleasant. We stayed home, didn't go anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Some people let off some firecrackers right in front of our house, though.
How is that even
possible? They weren't lighting them on our property, but we had some guests staying with us, and some of them actually damaged the mirror on their car.
Oh. So. that's a shame. Because I could have sworn they said it was illegal, but of course.
Well, yes, that little word doesn't always stop people.
or certain other
people. We're protesting Trump! That makes it legal!
So, to respond a couple of things to some earlier monologues.
Yeah.
I remember watching The Day the Earth Stood Still, the remake specifically.
Had you seen the original
already?
I did
not get to see the original until
after. Oh, so you started with
it.
The remake.
Exactly. Yeah. What I thought was, man, Keanu Reeves is literally the most boring actor I've ever seen in this
movie.
Yeah,
having him in the movie wasn't a plus either, but that wasn't even my main thing. But I agree, him in there is no seller at
exactly.
all.
Exactly. Like, he usually does a really good job on most of his roles because he plays it so over the top, or he always gives the right amount
there
of energy.
There was one where, I forgot what it was called, but Al Pacino played the devil and Keanu Reeves was in it. And that was one of the best and most accurate portrayals of the biblical devil that Hollywood has ever done.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah, but, he wasn't, Keanu Reeves was not bad in that one.
Okay, because I'm remembering from like John Wick, The Matrix, he was
Matrix
good.
Was good. Matrix yes. was decent.
Bill and Ted, he was really excellent in that movie.
Excellent.
That yeah. I thought he was good. Oh, is it The Devil's Advocate?
Yes, The Devil's Advocate. Okay. Everybody check that movie out. It's
I will definitely
seeing.
Check
yes.
it out. Point Break was really good. And one last one I do want to shout out for just being a good movie from him was, I got to look this up again because now I'm just figuring it out off the top of my head. But the main thing I'm trying to say is that he gives off certain energies to all of his films. And I thought he didn't do a good job on this one in particular. I will say Nicolas Cage later surpassed him as the most boring actor performance I've ever seen.
Well, Nicolas Cage is just in too many movies. It's like Michael Caine. What does he make, like 50 pictures a year? They're not bad actors, but when they're in that many movies, it stands to reason they're going to get involved with some projects that aren't as good, aren't as well written.
In this case, he had to file for bankruptcy, so he had to say yes to a lot of projects in that sense. But when I watched Left Behind, oh my gosh, his performance was just stonewall. There's literally a scene where they see a plane has nobody on it or no pilot, so no one's flying it, and they should be mortified or something. That plane has nothing on it. Oh no, what should we do? Like, come on, emote something. I don't know, do something.
I did see that. I'm not a huge fan of the Left Behind series, mostly because the theology is a little whacked out. But the sequel to that, when they were finally living in the tribulation, was a little more interesting. And then I don't think I ever saw the conclusion.
I'm surprised, yeah. Because it's like one of the very few Kirk Cameron movies I can like sit through and be like, okay, at least it's okay. But then they also made the sequel to the remake one. So that one's starring
Sorbo. I haven't kept them all Kevin straight. Sorbo. I know one was a sequel, one was a remake, and then a remake of a sequel.
So I will justify with you, most of the time the remakes are much worse than the sequel. There are a few times where I have to say I actually like the remake a little bit
more. You remember the critics Siskel and Ebert?
Of course, they're
classics. They once said something really interesting. They said, why take a classic and ruin it by remaking it? Why don't you take a movie that had potential and was an interesting story but was mediocre and remake that and make it good? I thought that was an interesting idea.
Well, the other thing I found out too from them is like, they always, whenever it was a TV series made to a movie, they always take the characters out of their setting elements. Like Beverly Hillbillies, for example. They decided to take them out of Beverly Hill. Why? The whole point of the joke was for them to be...
Now, with the Brady Bunch, it worked because that was a satire. That was not meant to be a serious episode of the Brady Bunch. So I was okay when they did that.
Right. But when Hollywood does these changes to classics, I don't understand
why. Now, there are some notable exceptions. I never saw the original 1950s series, The Untouchables, but the movie The Untouchables with Kevin Costner and Sean Connery, I thought was superb. So I can't say that that's always a problem.
Right.
But generally speaking, a remake of a movie or a TV show is not a good idea.
See, my one kind of caveat to the whole thing would be True Grit. I actually like the remake much more than the original one.
You know, I have to confess, because I saw the remake and I saw it first, and then I went and watched the original. And since the original had John Wayne, I was certainly expecting to like it better, but I didn't.
Okay.
So I think I have to agree with you on that.
Perfect. Yeah. What I enjoyed
just shows there's always exceptions to
exactly.
these rules.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not saying that the John Wayne one was bad by any means. It's fine.
No, but I did think the remake was better.
It adds a lot more layers of emotionality to it. Like, like, for example, the very end where she does kill her father's killer at the end there, you should feel accomplished. You should feel like that was my main mission, my main goal. But no, there's this emptiness to it. There's this darkness to it. Like, so now what do I do with it? I did it, but now what? So,
of course, the audience has to hear me every Christmas just wail on the remake of The Grinch. So,
well, that's
coming up in just six easy months for you. Something to look forward to.
All right. Well, because you were talking about The Day the Earth Stood Still, I thought I would review a movie that just came out about a month ago to theaters, and now it's already on streaming on Max, because I thought it was going to be a big parody of that movie, but turned out it was completely different in every single way, form, and fashion. It was a Looney Tunes movie called The Day the Earth Blew Up. I'm going to quickly do a review of it, and then
I should go on the record first as saying I love the classic Looney Tunes.
They are fantastic.
And there's a bit that we need to bring back to the Bob Siegel Show that we've done from time to time of playing Hollywood activists and Democrats and then having Sylvester click on with his, shut up! It's my favorite bit that we've ever done on this show.
I really, really love that bit. So in this case, we have Pete Browngart directing this movie. He's never directed anything, but he's done animations beyond galore.
So this isn't by the same people that did Space Jam a few years ago?
No, this is now it's the same company, Warner Brothers Animation, right, in this case. But yeah, get this. Do you know how many writers were on this movie? This was shocking to me because I was like, okay, there's one writer, there's another writer in the credits, but then it just kept popping up. There's a total of 11 writers in this movie. That is insane.
Well, normally I don't like that, but the day's coming when there's going to be one writer AI, so we should hold on to this as long as we can.
I guess I should worry about that more for sure, but 11, that means there's a lot of rewrites, maybe some joke changes here and there. I got really worried.
And usually the project, when it's done, doesn't even remotely resemble the original script.
Exactly. So this stars Eric Bauza, who does a lot of Looney Tunes characters today. So he does the Bugs Bunny, the Marvin the Martian.
Oh, how positively dandy. I've discovered another earth creature.
I love his voice so much growing up. He does Luke Skywalker in modern cartoons. He's in Fairly Odd Parents. It also stars Candy Milo, who is the granny in modern cartoons with Looney Tunes. You know how she goes, oh, stop chasing me, Yosemite.
Yes,
I love that cartoon there. There was a show called Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. It's coming back. She was in that show, played a few main roles there. And then there's Dexter's Laboratory, Chalk Zone. Peter McNichol is in it. He's at Ghostbusters 2. If you remember, I don't know what Zool per se, but it was like the museum guy. He was the main museum.
Yes, who was dating the woman who had been Bill Murray's girlfriend.
Yes.
Sigourney Weaver
played
the part.
So he's in this movie as well. Fred Tatasciore, I think that's
how I assume this is a combination of live people and animation, this movie?
No, this is completely animated. These are just the voice
actors. Oh, it's 100. Okay, because Space Jam was a combination of live
and
animated.
Exactly, yeah, but
okay.
This one was completely 2D animated, so that was
quite
impressive.
And is it computer animation or is it the old single cell animation?
It's single cell. It's
2D. Oh, so they're paying homage to the original.
Exactly.
Well, that makes it a little more interesting.
I was going to get to that point, but I'll just say it right now. That's a big pro for me.
Absolutely.
I am getting so tired.
I'm tired of the computer generated too. The others were so much more creative.
Like, I will give Pixar its due because they are able to follow it through with some really intriguing stories.
It's fine as one kind of animation, but for Pete's sakes, there can be other kinds.
Exactly. And I just miss the 2D animation in generality.
Yeah, remember Snow White first came out? Well, you don't remember because neither of us remember. No, we weren't alive. Yes. But there had never been anything like that in every single cell hand-painted by Walt Disney's company.
I will say, by the way, for those of you who are wondering about my top 10 worst movies of the year, don't be surprised. A Snow White remake will be in
there. That's another one that I would not need to see to know how I feel about it.
I bet you won't. So, also, I just want to give a shout-out. Wayne Knight is in this movie, too. If you don't know, he's Newman from Seinfeld.
Oh, hello, Newman.
I love that, like, running gag throughout the movie. Yeah. Anyways, so this involves Daffy and Porky Pig. They have to stop an alien bubblegum scheme throughout this whole movie.
Are they still allowed to have Porky Pig stutter? Or
yeah,
they're not called offensive or anything?
Yeah, it's actually pretty funny on how it happens. So Porky Pig's reading out of Moby Dick, and he's just eloquently reading the words.
Speaking of that, if you get a chance, you got to go to YouTube.
Okay.
And it's Porky Pig singing, I think it's I'll Be Home for Christmas. And he's singing it in front of an audience. And of course, he's stuttering the whole time. The audience is laughing its heads off. And Porky Pig can't figure out what the problem is. If not I'll Be Home for Christmas, some Christmas classic like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to find that. You'll die laughing. Just die laughing.
Is it the original voice actor Mel
Blanc?
Yes,
it's the original Mel Blanc. Yes.
That's amazing. Yes. Mel Blanc was so talented
at the time. Oh, my goodness. He's so many voices. You'd never think they all came from the same man.
So going back to the movie, the voice acting is really, really well done. Everyone's emoting very well. The one thing I was actually very surprised about was Daffy Duck. You can make Daffy Duck very unlikable. I've seen it so many times in modern Looney Tunes where his character is the most annoying or the most mischievous, and you just don't want to see him succeed.
And then other times they put him in the role of the straight guy, yes, too. They do different things with Daffy Duck.
But luckily, they're able to make him not only the funniest character, but also just, again, a very likable person and sympathetic towards him. So anytime he's making a mistake, you're like, yeah, I could see that he made a mistake. But at the same time, he's just trying to really help out in the situations that they're in. So I will say that is a very, very tough, risky road to go down. So
it's tangential, but did you like Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Loved,
this is reminding me of that.
Loved, yeah. Who Framed Roger,
yeah,
Rabbit.
Yeah, I thought that was a great movie. Yeah.
So now the cons here very quickly. The modern jokes are a little few and far between, in my opinion. And they're very strange. Like, they refer to their butts quite a bit. And I'm like, why? This is not
I've never found bathroom humor funny.
Exactly.
Never found it funny.
And do you know how often Looney Tunes went to bathroom humor? Very rarely, surprisingly enough.
I don't remember them ever going to bathroom humor in the originals.
It's always slapstick, yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to do a pole vaulting thing, and then you cut to the other side of the wall, and there's an indent on the other side.
Yeah.
It's hilarious that way. So the potty humor, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's cheap. It's a cheap laugh, and it's so uncreative.
There is one very funny modern commentary joke on it. So they're trying to get jobs, and they're like, how about this be social media influencers? We can't be fired from that. And they're like, okay, let's make an account. And they're like, all right, and we're going to hit create account. And then as soon as they hit it, it said canceled. I was like, okay, that's pretty decent, actually. And the follow-up joke was pretty good, saying like, boy, modern times are much different than they were back then.
Was Foghorn Leghorn in the movie?
No, he was not. No other cameos.
He was one of my favorites. Come here, I say, come here, boy. I learned you how to play ball.
I'm very surprised they didn't do it. And by the way, I'm not a chicken. I'm not a chicken. That you chicken hawk. That chicken's over there. So this movie's only 80 minutes, but it feels very stretched out. Like, they have to keep putting in different
things. Well, 80 minutes, that's a long cartoon. That's probably why it feels stretched out.
But like, they have a simple plot, and then they have to add one more layer, and then just a tiny more layer, and then a tiny more layer on top of that.
Well, it sounds like it's worth watching at least once.
It is. It is. There is one plot twist I didn't see coming for sure, but the rest of it, it's very predictable. You can tell from eight.
Well, the predictability was part of their charm. In that case, it was a cartoon.
Exactly, yeah.
You know that Wile E. Coyote paints a fink.
The
Roadrunner's going to run right through it.
Right. With that Looney Tunes reference that you just made, the only difference for that unpredictability is, like, let's say he's on that cliff and he's cutting the cliff in half. You don't know which side it's going to fall. Is it the big side or is it that one tiny part of the cliff that stays up? You know, yeah. So interesting facts about the movie. The movie cost $15 million to make. It made back its budget, $15.1 million at the box office.
Wow, we need them in Washington.
We just passed $100,000. We're good. It was originally supposed to just go straight to streaming with a block called the Act Me Block. They were going to make 5 different Looney Tunes movies and just release
them
daily.
That was always the company that built Wile E. Coyote's explosives,
exactly.
Acme.
Yeah, so they were going to do 5 different movies each one, but what happened was Warner Brothers got bought out by Discovery, and so because of that, they decided to just cut their costs and just do the one movie, put it into theaters too. The other thing that they wanted to do was make sure the film lasted in the theaters for 2 weeks. Do you know why, by that chance?
I do not know why.
Oh, they could be now eligible for an Academy Award. So that's what they're trying
to
do.
But now wait, we've had movies that have gone to streaming without even going to theaters and have gone
on to
Academy
Award. That was a COVID policy after
this. Because I remember that movie about I Love Lucy being the Ricardos. That was never in the theaters.
It's true, yeah. And the same one with, I think it's called Roma, if I remember right. Where it was
so that was a special COVID exception.
Exactly, okay. Yeah. So after this year, they are now specifically supposed to go in theaters for at least 2 weeks again.
I loved when the movie theaters opened up during the COVID days. They opened up again. Well, you can eat your refreshments, but between bites, you have to put your mask on.
But I will say this about COVID was I appreciate the fact of the drive-in theaters being popular again. That part I really appreciated. Something about going to the drive-in theaters and seeing the movies there again was something special. And it's a shame that we don't have the CNT one anymore.
Yeah, I remember the George Carlin routine. Hey, where are you going with your date this Friday night? I'm about going to the makeout drive-in theater. There's no fuss, there's no muss, there's no movie either, Jack.
Yep, you're just making that basically the entire time. All right, so overall, I do give the movie a decent 7 out of 10.
Oh, that's coming from you. That's not small praise.
Yeah, I will say there are issues with it for sure. But again, overall, I think it's good for a one-time watch. I won't go back to it for a while, I feel like, especially not showing it to my son. I don't think it's appropriate enough for my son, surprisingly enough. So, but I'll show him the old cartoons for sure on a daily basis.
Oh, they're just, nothing makes me laugh more. And when I was a little kid, I never found them funny. Bob, as an adult, they're just hilarious.
Bob, what season is it, by the way? Is it Wabbit season or Duck season? I can't tell. tell right now. But
well, I think they've done it with both. I think Bugs Bunny kept changing it to duck season because Elmer Fudd was coming and he was talking him into thinking it's duck season and not rabbits.
So. Well, one of my favorite jokes was when they were arguing, ripping off the poster, and then all of a sudden the last one said Elmer Fudd season. And they were, that was a good, good joke.
They did a Gilda Radner routine one time on Saturday Night Live. It was Barbara Walters meets Elmer Fudd because they kind of talked the same. How I am in Jerusalem. Ooh, the Wily Wascally Wabbit.
All right. Well, coming up, we got some news stories, some really, really interesting news. Again, I swear every week we just have to have more and more news stories, I feel like. But we'll talk about that when we come back.
Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about, and you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda. But you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back.
Skyline Church.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. If you've been thinking about getting your pilot's license and a degree in aviation, come fly with us. We have a long history of producing aviation leaders. Whether your focus is on commercial, missionary, or military, we're ready to help you achieve your goals from a Christian worldview. So look us up at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Come fly with us.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. You know, when you're on the radio, you do a variety of subjects, serious, lighthearted. We were kind of having fun in our last segment, and it was lighthearted, but we would be remiss to not mention the horrible flooding in Texas and the lives that are lost and the families that are in turmoil, hoping their loved ones will be found. So our prayers go out. And by the way, my good friend and co-host Jim Barrier lives in San Antonio, and that was at the heart of a lot of this. I did contact him immediately, and he is fine. So I'm glad to report that. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Yeah, I did notice the Facebook post he made saying that he is safe from the flood. So again, hearts and prayers go out to them. 78, I think, is the death toll so far. That's pretty.
And it's only going to go up, unfortunately.
All right, so let's get into some news today. So this past 4th of July, we had our 249th birthday as our country. So that means the big 250s next year.
And
so
I like how they're saying we are approaching the 250th year, so we're going to celebrate it all year.
Exactly.
Because if you celebrate it next year, that year's already over. So
exactly.
I like this idea of a year of celebrations.
So one of the things that came about the announcement was President Donald Trump announced that he was going to have a UFC fight on the White House lawn next year to celebrate America's 250th birthday. This comes about with the relationship between Donald Trump and Dana White, who is the president of the UFC, having a good relationship since 2003. So here they are now, and they're scheduling this fight. So personally, let me just say a few things about the situation. Number one, I do feel like this this is not appropriate to do it on the White House lawn. I feel like the White House and the lawn, everything around the property should be a little bit more respected. I'm saying there's a level of respectability between a political, presidential, and something that's known as a national landmark versus UFC fighting in an arena sort of thing. So that's just number one. That's the con for me.
I see your point, but on the other hand, Trump just out of his own money paid for two huge American flags to put in the front and back of the White House. So he's showing the respect. I sometimes think he does this stuff just to mess with the Democrats' heads. He's really in his element with the wrestling. I don't have a lot of emotion about wrestling. They could have it, they could not have it. I don't really care. But I think Trump just loves the shock value of it, and he just loves the fact that it means he's going to continue living rent-free in some of these people's minds.
No, it's true. I will say, too, President Dana White of UFC said, yes, this is confirmed. The plans are going to be happening next year, too. And one of the wrestlers, too, Conor McGregor, I shouldn't say wrestler, but fighters.
Well, he gets a lot of respect and patriotism from the wrestlers. And after all he's been through, to me, that's the least of his issues.
Number two, you better book this correctly. You better have a UK man versus an American fighting against each other. And the American better be trained by a Frenchman, too, to help him with the fight situation.
To make it reminiscent of our Revolutionary War.
Exactly, yeah. Yes, and make sure that America wins in the end. That's the last thing I'm going to mention about this whole thing. Just make sure you book
this correctly.
I
really hadn't thought of that angle, but I suppose that could be part of it, that our independence was about a competition, or not
exactly
a competition, but a fight. Well,
it only makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean, come on,
I
you got to think about
I guess there's some rhyme or reason to this. Like I said, not a lot of emotion one way or the other.
All I'm going to say is that my jokes here on this show are so, so smart here. I'm just telling you, everyone didn't think of that until I said so.
That was a good one. That was a good one, Brendan.
Okay, so very serious news here. Elon Musk is looking to start a new political party, this one being called the America Party. We talked about third parties long ago.
They're never a good idea, and I hate it when conservatives do it, because right now, Elon Musk isn't liked by the liberals because of his association with Trump. That's not going to change quickly anytime soon. It's going to be conservatives that go to this new party. Mm-hmm. That's going to split the conservative vote, and it could hand things over to the Democrats.
But
it's not a good idea.
But here's the thing. So Trump was trying to start a third party one time, I thought, too. Right?
He was starting to... There was a time when Trump was saying, if I don't get the nomination, I may start a third party.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very vocal about the fact that I didn't like that either. And that
I don't remember that. Oh, so you were against that, too.
Oh, no, I was totally against that, because he wouldn't have won. The most serious third party election that we had was when Ross Perot came about. That handed the election to Bill Clinton.
That's right. Yes.
Bill Clinton did not get the majority of the American vote. The majority was split between Bush Sr. and Ross Perot. And Ross Perot charmed everybody, but he was kind of a melonhead, too. See the problem? Eyeball it. Problem solved. I don't know why people are taking him seriously, but put that aside. Yes. Let's say he was great. Let's say he was fantastic. He wasn't going to win. All it did was hand the election to Bill Clinton.
It's so, so hard for a third party to even do that. You have to have a lot of
funding. There could be a place for it, but you've got to nurture it and bring it along and say, for a while, we're not going to try to win elections. We're just going to take the parties that are here and hold them accountable. And then maybe eventually you start introducing a senator or a congressman. Mm-hmm. But I think Elon Musk is just experiencing a lot of sour grapes because we don't have an EV mandate anymore. And he's complaining about all the fraud in this new bill. This bill cuts government spending more than any other bill we've ever had.
Yeah.
But it's not perfect. Like they say, bills are like watching sausage being made. And we don't have an EV mandate. Make a case that an EV mandate was good for the economy of our country.
It's good for his economy, Bob.
Yes.
What are you talking about?
So it's disappointing. I loved seeing the partnership between Musk and Trump. And Musk just seems to be going off the deep end. But if he gets a lot of traction with this third party, it will not be good for our midterms. And he's gone out of his way saying he wants to get the Republicans out of there during the midterms. He will, but nobody from his new American party is going to get in.
Right.
It's just going to be the Democrats.
Yeah, but what we were talking about last time with this whole third party situation was there was a Democratic group that said they were getting frustrated with how the Democrats...
Oh, I love when they do it, because then it hands it over to the Republicans.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, Democrats, you go start all the third parties you want. I just don't want to see the conservatives.
They kept trying to advertise the fact like, oh, no, we also have conservative point of view, so we're a middleist group. But that's what every third party is going to say, too.
Well, that's it. When people claim to be moderate, these days a moderate is pro-gay marriage and pro-choice and things that aren't really moderate at all. But they're just not quite as far over the cliff as the Marxist leftists.
Right.
So they call themselves moderate.
And besides, you said, too, when the left goes so far to the left, that middle point starts to skew in.
Yeah. If the moderate wants to stay halfway between the left and the right is always standing still and the left keeps moving more left, the moderate, by definition, has to keep getting more leftist.
It's true.
So So I don't take it seriously when people call themselves moderates at all.
So very quickly, he said by a factor of 2-1, you want a new political party and you shall have it. He wrote on X one day, given the razor-thin legislative margins, that would be enough to serve as a deciding vote on a contentious laws, ensuring that they serve the true will of the people, he said on Friday. Now, we do want to mention that the party has not been registered and it's not registered within the Federal Election Committee because this is just a brand new idea he's bringing up. I doubt he's even going to go through with this whole thing in the first place, but it is a big talk about point right
now.
Well,
he did a lot of venting a couple of months ago and then came back and apologized, so maybe he'll realize this is a stupid idea. Now, if it really is only a matter of having a couple of people who, at the moment, we have something like that. We have a few independents in Congress and they tip the scales. That's not as much of a problem as trying to bring in this major candidate in a presidential election. Mm-hmm. You have two conservative candidates, you're throwing the election to the Democrats. It's just simple math.
But I will say this. I feel like other third party, they mainly focus on the presidency situation and that's it. But here, Musk announced that if he does do this party, he's focused in on the 2 or 3 Senate seats. That's it. And then 8 or 10 House districts. And I get it.
I will say in that context, a third party is not really necessarily the end of the world. Because
right.
Whatever party they're with, they're going to still caucus with somebody.
Exactly. And keep in mind, he still wants to be legislative friends with certain political parties. I bet. And when he said that on that tweet, my hint was going to the Conservative Party the entire time. Because I really do think
gets back to the problem. That's why the conservative vote's going to get split. So even in some of these races, if he actually succeeded in getting somebody from the American Party in, that's fine. But in those individual elections, the conservatives are going to split between the Republican and the American.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to win? The Democrat.
Probably. And then not to mention, too, again, those 3 seats and the 10 seats possibly that he's looking to go for max at those House and Senate districts and seats specifically, they could really, really mean so much in terms of a lot. Like this big, beautiful bill only got passed by 1 vote. And the liberals were blaming on the fact that one of their sides was sleeping during the vote. That's why it counted as.
Did you hear that speech that Hakeem Jeffries gave? What was it, 8 hours?
And that was a
brand
new
record. Who wouldn't have been asleep during that time?
By the way, you preheat your oven at 350. Oh, this is all important, guys. You got to stay on here.
You could sail to Europe and come back before he was done with that speech.
Oh, man. Again, I keep referencing it, but Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is not the movie for you, sir. Stop watching that movie. Well, Bob, thank you again so much for
Brendan,
this talk.
Brendan, it's always a pleasure.
Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.